Hello again, and welcome to another episode of No Prize Podcast. I am the Professor Bud Young, and with me, as always, from across the pond is Johnny the Machine Hughes. How are you, Johnny?
I am fantabulous. How the hell are you?
I am terrific. Terrific. And also with us is he who shall not be nicknamed, Lucas.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm absolutely stoked to talk about comics this week. After all the news that's been coming out, we got some great books to talk about.
Yeah, go there. Let's get right into it. So, let's get into Absolute Carnage here and talk Venom number 17 for a few minutes. Take it away, Lucas.
So, you know, Venom number 17 has got, of course, the infamous Donnie freaking Cates, man. Freaking, he's been writing some really good stuff lately. We got Gene Coelho and Rain Barreto. I believe that's how you pronounce the freaking name. Rain Barreto. And what this story does, I mean, it fucking drops us right into this whole Absolute Carnage freaking storyline. So for those who haven't been freaking tracking, you know, there's the God Null and the symbiotes that run around. They're ripping the freaking spines and backbones out of freaking people so they can freaking get at the symbiote codex. Well, one of the last pieces, of course, is the, what's his name, the Dylan Brock kid. And there's also Normie Osborn, who is the Goblin Child. The thing is Venom can't help him out because he's off with Spider-Man. He's attempting to stop Carnage's plan. But he actually left his son / brother or whatever with the Maker, who was like the future evil Reed Richards or something like that, from the Ultimate Universe. The Maker actually built a new machine. The first appearance is called Scythe. And what he wants to do is he wants to use it to remove the codex from Dylan so that the Carnage won't have to freaking kill him to get the codex out of him. Now, side note is you'll actually benefit from this issue if you also read the previous Absolute Carnage tie-in Separation Anxiety. Some of the featured antagonists are part of the Life Foundation, as part of this family that got taken over by some of the symbiotes. And man, do I love the Maker in this freaking book. I love his freaking nonchalance about the whole freaking deal and his, hey, get to the facts, get to the mission, get it going. This alternate universe, Reed Richards, is simply put drenched in arrogance. He's got this collected composure. I like this freaking cold nonchalance about everything. And the way Coelho drew his smirkness was awesome. I believe that's all I've got to say about it. What did you guys think? I know you guys had to read it real quick, but what did you guys think, if anything at all?
Johnny, do you want to go first?
No.
Okay. All right. So
I'll go after.
Okay. The major disconnect for me on this book is the fact that I really don't like Carnage, so. An Absolute Carnage crossover that's running 3 months through all the Spider-Man books and Venom and all that is really kind of not really my thing. I'm not interested in it at all. That being said, I remember a few weeks ago we totally destroyed Separation Anxiety on this very podcast. So seeing these characters again did not make me happy. But other than that, I did have some questions. I really don't know what the Maker's motivation is here. I don't know why he's in this book. I don't know why he wants to separate people from their codexes. I don't know if he's got some kind of sinister plan, but to me it makes zero sense. And like, I just don't know why he's even here.
it's a mission unknown. He was hired by somebody to separate Venom from Eddie Brock, which he was successful in doing, which ended up giving that stillbirth, which is what happened to the Sleeper, because that's where the Sleeper came from. It came from the stillbirth of Venom being pulled away from Betty Brock, which is the very, spoilers, that's the very last panel of the freaking book.
That was another question that I had. Like, I remember seeing Sleeper on something else, but is he pure symbiote, or who is that?
He is the original symbiote. The original symbiote that was attached to Eddie Brock and Spider-Man and Deadpool, that is the original symbiote. But when he was pulled away, like, all the memories, it's basically, it was, like, reset. So he doesn't really get everything. He doesn't really know everything. All he knows is just a little bit of what he's experienced since he's been pulled away.
But is there a real dude under the suit?
Yes, the first host. So before the symbiote actually made it to Earth, there was this one other guy. It was like an alien, and I think that was Clintar, and the symbiote was attached to him for a little while as part of like a military thing, and then eventually they got separated and then made its way to Earth.
All right, I remember that story now. Okay. All right. Yeah. So there's so much extraneous Venom stuff going on in here that.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
There's a. I mean, absolutely. If somebody doesn't like it because there's a lot of pieces missing from him, I get it. Because once again, this is the story that's been building up for 3 years now. Think about that. Three years. Because, and maybe even more. Well, actually, I'll talk you back. I'll see if I can find a year from She-Venom. So She-Venom. Which is where Dylan Brock's mom became She-Venom, and that was in 1995, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on with that that's eking into this story as well. But
I guess, you know, well, the other question that I have here is where this falls into Absolute Carnage number two. Is this between one and two? Because I know I read number two, and they had little Norman, who is prominent in this book, who's not a Carnage symbiote, or has no Carnage symbiote in him, is running around as a little Carnage symbiote.
Well, that's not true. He still has it in him, right? Like they may have ripped the main piece away from him. Supposedly, that's impossible. But he at least still has the Carnage Codex inside of him. Right. So. This is where it gets crazy, right? So there's two things happening here. The reason why speculators are crazy about this book is because, number one, the Sleeper showed up. That's the guy that showed up on the very last panel, right? That means that everybody has to go back and find, like, Venom number 168 and Venom number 2 and pick up those freaking books, because that makes it look like he's going to be a main character. Number two is that now that you got these Carnage symbiotes ripping through the walls trying to kill these kids, how are they going to get out? The only way they might be able to get out is that Sleeper symbiote might have to attach himself to the little kid, Dylan Brock, and the Red Goblin child, he might have to expose himself, and they might have to go out and fight. So that means that either the next one or the second to the next one might be some really big books. And Donnie Cates has gone publicly on his Twitter and saying that these next two books might be big books.
Okay.
Johnny.
So I am of the mindset that I'm not a big Venom fan either. And if you have to explain the book as, well, it's from the stillbirth of something else, then I'm sorry, I'm just not really that interested. Comics are supposed to be entertainment. I don't want to hear about how stillbirth this and stillbirth that.
So you don't want to hear my dissertation on Dr. Spasmosi and Parasite.
I want to hear your dissertation. What I mean to say is, any story that involves the stillbirth of something to create something else, to me, is like an odd. There's a line that needs to be drawn. I think. Well, I read this book, and as I say, I'm not a huge Venom fan, so I don't have a great deal of knowledge of Venom other than, you know, when he was originally conceived, way back when, and of course when Carnage was originally conceived. And after that, everyone thereafter has just been the same thing. And the story, I get that everyone loves Donny Cates, and it's a great writer, but what this book really is we've got a Venom problem. We've got a symbiote problem. So why don't we throw some more symbionts at it? And then we've got another symbiont problem. So let's throw some more symbionts at it. And then now we've got a symbiont problem. So I guess, I know, let's try something we haven't tried before. Let's throw a symbiont at it and keep it going and going and going. It's to the point now, and the art is chaotic, to say the least. I'm looking at the pages of this book, and I'm thinking, is that tendril supposed to be that symbiont? Is that symbiont supposed to be that tendril? I was like, you know what? It makes no sense. It's repetition of a theme to the past. And the art just doesn't help your eye adjust to anything. That, and, you know, no. I would say that some of the art, when it goes to, you see the kids' faces, is very well done. You can see the expressions, but the action panels, man, they are just chaos.
This is a
clobber like nobody's business. This is so clobbering. This is Ben Grimm and the She thing, the Miss Marvel thing, rocking up together and knocking us all back to the empty street. Very good. For me, Chris.
I'm going to agree with you on the art, because there was panels where, you know, and maybe I'm going to juxtapose this with Absolute Carnage number 2 that came out this week too. But there were panels that I was like, is that Carnage? Oh no, that's just another symbiote he took over. Oh wait, is that Carnage? Yeah, right. So
that's the problem. It's just another one. It's like, right. Well, it's like there's no the deal with the best villains. The deal with the best villains is that they're unique. The more you use them, the more, the quicker they lose their impact. Remember the first Alien movie. You hardly see the damn thing. By the time you see, like, the last Alien movie, we've got to see it swimming in water. We've done all that. It has no fear anymore. Same with the Daleks in Doctor Who, the Borg in Star Trek. You've got the Shadows in Babylon 5. All these major villains, the more you see, the less you fear them, the less of an impact they have. And Carnage is that Marvel character. I'm going to shut up now. Cool.
Well, so it was a clobber for me too. I didn't like it, and I don't know. It just seemed like a skip a beat, because I usually like the Venom book, but this, it seemed like they took a month off just to do the crossover. So it was a flame on for you, right?
It's a continuation. So I understand absolutely, like, all your points, but right now in a speculation world, this book is catching hot fire. It's going to be, so it's this one plus the next two books are going to be really hot. So if you see this book and the next two books, don't leave them just laying around on the shelves. Pick those books up. Make sure you stash them away, because there's supposedly, according to the bigwigs, there's something happening. One last thing that I noticed. I don't know if you guys got a chance to look at the last Black Panther book. But so in Black Panther, Killmonger actually has the symbiote as well. And there's a mark on his chest that is very similar to the way the sleeper looks right now. So I just wanted to throw that out and get people's minds going when they're listening.
You know, I did notice that too, and all I did was roll my eyes and said, "Hey, it's another symbiote."
Yeah, well, that's been happening since Black Panther number 2 of this current run. So it wasn't like it just showed. Yeah, it just wasn't just like it showed up, but it's a little weird with the Black Panther symbiote, because it's not just, it's Killmonger with the symbiote, with Bast, with M'Jaku's his daughter, plus now his security guard. So there's all types of weird stuff going on with Black Panther. But hey, fuck, that's what Tanisha Coates wants to do with it, putting him in space and just getting all types of crazy. Hey, let him do what he wants. All right, next book.
Space Panther, all right. All right, so we're going to do Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 11, yes. Which is a wonderful picture of Mary Jane on the cover.
Really?
Right. It's great cover art. It's just unfortunate it had nothing to do with what was happening in the story. But okay.
All right, Johnny, take it away.
So this cover, which I personally detest more with a passion.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I did like the idea that it was kind of a semi-throwback to Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 19. Lucas, go check it out. Go and Google it now to see what I mean. That's how you do a cover with Mary Jane wearing a Spider-Man costume. Just saying. So the story is pretty quite simple. That Peter's had a bit of a day, or a bit of a night, I should say. And we get to follow a day in the life of Mary Jane as she goes about her business. It's written by Tom Taylor, with art by Juan Cabal. Colour artist is Rochelle Rosenberg, and letterer is VC's Travis Lanham. The book, it's a fun little diversion. I enjoyed it for what it was. The art's a little bit plain in places. The characters don't seem to pop off the page. But then it's a conversation piece. It's not supposed to be an action piece. This is the Mary Jane that we've been missing in Amazing Spider-Man. You know, she's competent. Taylor's shown that he knows her history. She's comfortable around Miles Morales. She's got Tony Stark on speed dial. You know, this is the Mary Jane that we've had for the last few years. As an interlude, it is interesting. I quite enjoyed it. It was quite fun. I loved the dialogue and how it kind of mirrored the early parts with Peter coming home and then Mary Jane coming home and the thing about the trolls and the lights and stuff. It is what it is. Spider-Man's one of those books where, unfortunately, it's not going to cater to just one group of people. It has to be kind of made for a group of fans because Spider-Man's so instantly recognizable. So whilst it might carry a lack of weight in comparison to other books out there, it's the price you pay for having like a multi-million dollar movie franchise ripped away from Disney. For me, I'm not going to flame it on because the art does bother me a little bit. I'm going to give it a good old stretch on Mr. Fantastic. It is what it is. It's just a nice, fun story. There you go. Simple as.
Next. So yeah, I do largely agree with you. I think that that as an interlude piece, it is kind of a like a nice bit of a break, and the art was a little standoffish to me too because just a lot of it had like a lack of backgrounds. Like they throw like the little flashy stuff in the background to, I guess maybe try to make some of the stuff pop off the page, but it wasn't really working for me. There was a couple of good pieces in this book. I loved right at the beginning of the issue where they had like the snapshot of a Friendly Neighborhood Mary Jane cover with, you know, and just to kind of let you know that, hey, she looks model ready even when she wakes up from, in the morning. And then they juxtapose it later on the issue with Peter in the same exact pose with his costume on, and he still looks like shit. So, So I actually thought that was a nice sight gag. There's not a lot of action in here, but it is like a powerful Mary Jane stuff who's been literally invisible in Amazing Spider-Man, right? I've always liked the fact that there's always been kind of like one Spider-Man book, and this must be it with that concentrates on his supporting cast, and that's what I like this book for, is because you get more Aunt May, you get more Mary Jane, and you know, you get more of the characters that you know people love that are old Spider-Man fans. So it is a bit of a stretch to me because the art was a little distracting at times, but. Yeah, it was good for what it was.
I like the ordering the drinks and the bagels at the start because you wait all that time and you get there, you still don't know what you want. It's that was like well observed writing. So
I wish they could have put the Popeye's chicken sandwich in there. That would have been a little bit more timely.
Well, the funny thing was about that scene is that, you know, obviously Spider-Man had been sitting in the line for 35 minutes and no one did. They just let him stand in line.
Yeah. Like, dude, he's got to save lives. You're not going to let him bump in front of you? Come on now.
I just thought it was funny. And like, no, but like, it's New York. No one gives a shit.
Here's what I would have did. I would say, hey, Spider-Man, go ahead and line in front of me. Oh, by the way, I'll give you $10. I would have paid for Spider-Man's freaking joint to let him go in front of me, man. But no, I don't know. But that's what
do you remember? Do you remember the old Straczynski series where he is talking to the guy that makes the costumes, and he says, "You've got somewhere safe to go." He takes him to a diner, and the costume guy goes, "You come here all the time? Are you sure it's safe?" And he goes, "Oh yeah. I came in Halloween. The guy thinks I'm just some nut dressed as Spider-Man." He shouts at the owner, "Hey, man, I'm Spider-Man." And the owner's going, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nah, I'm such and such." And like, so, you know, clothes apparently do not make the man, Spider otherwise.
Well, that was a bit of an amusement for me. And so, you know, I think Tom Taylor's doing a good job on this. So,
Tom Taylor rumored to be one of the people considered for the Batman book when Tom King leaves.
Really?
Unless he's exclusive to Marvel, which I don't think he is, because he's been doing Injustice books for a while. So,
all right. So where do we want to pivot here?
Lucas hasn't said anything about the book yet. It's Lucas' turn.
Oh, Lucas, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I have been butting in on your guys freaking talking, so I understand. So, I mean, so what was interesting is this is like the first time that we've really seen MJ since the start of the book, right? And which was kind of disappointing because there was the whole thing where she was going to the support groups That's true. People who are families or friends of these other superheroes. So I was looking forward to that at some point, but they just dropped that whole thing. But it's great to see her back nonetheless, which was and great to see her in this type of role, right, where she's taking care of the back stuff behind Spider-Man, right? Like, whereas Spider-Man, you know, and Peter Parker, he really couldn't get into, I mean, it is breaking his heart that Aunt May is sick, but he couldn't really be there for her because he's not programmed that way, right? Mm-hmm. But she was there. Yeah, exactly. So she's there in the background. She's taking him not just to the doctor, but she's also taking her wig shopping, right? Mm-hmm. And what was really great about that was there was this whole thing that Aunt May goes into. She's like, "Oh, you're not just going to buy one." "No, I'm going to buy five." You know why? Because sometimes stuff gets really, really bad. And I get really, really scared. And when I get scared, I'm going to put on a different wig. I'm going to put on the fiercest wig I can to feel like a different person. That was freaking powerful to me. And that's that makes it to me that Tom Taylor really gets, you know, the mind of a sick person and where they're at sometimes. That was freaking awesome to me. What kind of ruined it for me was the whole stuff about the troll and Miles Morales running around. I didn't need that. If they would have just stuck with the whole stuff with Peter Parker getting bagels and taking Aunt May to the doctor and going wig shopping, this would have been a perfect book for me. But you know what? It was so powerful. Some of the panels that they did put together, I'm going to flame on this freaking book, and I'm going to freaking stick.
Well, all right.
Well done. Good call. This isn't the first time Tom Taylor's tackled. You can't say that quick, can you? This isn't the first time Tom Taylor's tackled illness. Didn't he write the book that was very similar to the classic where the little lads?
Yes. I believe that was similar, right?
Yeah.
It was in the same series, right? So that was
so, but
4 or 5 titles ago or 4 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got game in relation to that, even if the first one's more of a homage piece. And as for the cover not having an impact, the cover's a metaphor because she's saving the day just like Spider-Man would. And plus, if it doesn't have a spider costume on, are you even going to pick up the book?
And so why did you detest the cover?
Why did I detest the cover? That is a good question. Because it looks out of proportion and she looks awful. She looks like she's got some sort of wasting away disease going on.
She's got that red line going across her eyes.
He likes this woman thick. Noted. It's on the record. He likes this woman thick.
Fine. I'm not going to complain about that. But So she doesn't look attractive. She's supposed to be a model stroke actress. Figure wise, she's fallen into the "oh no, we can't make a woman too sexy" category. On top of that, the colours look awful. So yeah, it's I'm old school. It's like, if you're gonna put a woman in a skin tight costume, make it look attractive. It's that simple. Same way you put guys in skin tight costumes, make them look attractive. Batman doesn't look the same when he's ugly looking. Just saying. It's not a sexist thing. We read comic books to be entertained. We want to see attractive art. We want to read strong words. That's part and parcel. It's not a gender thing.
Cool. All right. So
so glad you made me say that. That's great.
No problem. I have no problem calling you out, Johnny.
Yeah, cool.
All right. So let's pivot to our 80-page bear of a book, Marvel Comics 1000.
Do we have to?
Would you rather do House of X first, and then we do Marvel 1000?
Let's Marvel, because we've got to do Powers in the House as well.
Yeah, we're gonna finish up with X-Men. So Marvel Comics number 1000. I'm not even gonna bother reading off the creative team because there's just way too many. So it's 80 years, 80 creative teams, one universe. Could have fooled me. There is I want to shout out the main writer for this book is Al Ewing. He's got several different pages in here where they make an attempt at kind of telling a story starting in 1939, when it's the first appearance of the Human Torch. And then every single page that we turn is a year in Marvel. So, what I expected, especially right at the beginning here, was maybe every pinup page or every story here was going to be probably like the most important event that happened in that year of Marvel. That is not even close to the case. it's not. but the one thing that I will say that I liked about this book is that they do kind of dig deep into the old timely stuff with Human Torch and the operative, which I've never heard of, and apparently the X-Men that were actually apparently the the harbinger of the Enclave, who come back in this book. And can you remember the last time the Enclave appeared in a Marvel comic? Was it when they first Resurrection of Jean Grey?
God, I couldn't tell you. I would have to take a punt at that and try and get from there, but no, I could not tell
you. So anyway, the overall story arc from the very first page till the last page is this black mask that appears and appears throughout the history of Marvel Comics, which several different characters wearing this black mask and what it represents, from the Black Rider to the Thunderer, until the a reveal, and apparently this is gonna excite Lucas, is the first appearance of the Masked Raider at the end of the book. To kind of break this down a little bit, it is kind of like a loose story throughout this book, but it is peppered with inane little sidetrack bits and really obscure type just divergences from anything. We had a page early on of America. With she's kind of given her little origin story, mm-hmm. and then down the bottom it says 1943 Miss America debuts in Marvel Mystery Comics number 49. This isn't Miss America. This is a totally different character. So yeah. I really kind of didn't understand what they were going for. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big complaints about this book is that it's almost, so I don't even want to call this a retcon, because it's almost like revisionist history going back to 1938. And we're supposed to believe that Marvel has been all-inclusive and diverse throughout, where You know, what they're doing is they're trumpeting and patting themselves on the back that they've always been inclusive with all these characters. And when I bring up things like stories of these one pages, like, I mean, we get the first appearance of Patsy Walker in 1945, which, you know what, that is acceptable. I would allow that, you know. But when we get into Terry the Typist or whatever her name was, I was like, I've never heard of that ever. Tessie the Typist.
Yes.
Ends its run in 1949. We had
Well, so let me jump in real quick on that one. So there's a whole bunch of other little characters that they've had that may not have been a part of Marvel, but they might have been a part of like Timely or Star or like the other ones, and they put the notes down there. And within the next 2 months, they are bringing back some one shots on those. So that's why they are making sure to throw those in there. I don't know if there's any future or if they plan on doing anything more with these characters. Maybe they're going to do a Taggart thing with some of these characters. But yeah, it is pretty interesting. Like you said, the Terry the Typist, and there was some stuff about Millie in there. So yeah, that stuff is kind of interesting.
But, yeah.
Can't wait to see that book, Terry the Typist.
And then, yeah, sign me up. But you know, they made Jimmy Woo from Agents of Atlas a much more crucial character, I guess, in the history of the Marvel Universe than anyone has previously thought. Yeah. And then I'm just scrolling through this right now, trying to come up with really obscure references. Red Wolf, White Tiger, and there is. Other than Wolverine, there is not one X-Man to be found in this whole book. And so we're supposed to think that in 80 years of Marvel history, the X-Men did not really factor at all. They mention the Avengers once. You see some of the characters in the Avengers, but there's no Vision, no Scarlet Witch to make any appearance in this book. There's no Hawkeye. There's very, very little Thor. Some of these pinups, like we get one page on the Inhumans, and I didn't even get the page. I was like, I don't understand this at all.
Because I think what they're going for is they're trying to show you stuff or projects that they're working on that should come out within the next couple of years. Thor, he may not have made it big on the inside of the book, but actually on the cover, if you look in the background, there is a poster of Thor right there, right behind the superheroes.
Yeah. So, but when I mentioned that some of these, you know, I was expecting like the biggest events in Marvel to be shown on this book. I'm looking at 1992. You cannot tell me that the biggest event in 1992 is Eric Larson taking over Amazing Spider-Man. You know, you can't tell me that that in 1983. The biggest change was Storm got a mohawk. I don't get it. I don't understand if maybe it was up to the writer and artist. You know, maybe they gave them, okay, you're going to be doing 1985. Here's everything that happened in 1985. Pick something that you can draw a picture of, or you can write something, a one pager about. You know, it's just. To me, like 1986, the Howard the Duck movie is released. Who cares? This is a comic book, you know. We get another one in Iron Man in 2008 that Iron Man was released. That has nothing to do with the comic book, you know. So to me, this was such, you know, for really a 5-page story that's kind of in this book, in this 80-page giant. So much of it is just crap and a one page pinup where you get a creative team that kind of is able to go ham on their five panels, and then that's it. So there's no cohesiveness. There's in any of the other pages. I mean, there's some cohesiveness in the Al Ewing written pages, but for it so much to be taken out of the book every five pages to look at another Rob Liefeld drawing of Cable in his package. That's pretty much. I wanted to clobber this book so hard, just for that. But I'm gonna give it an Invisible Woman for me, because, you know, at least we got the first appearance of Masked Raider, who I actually thought was kind of interesting throughout this story and makes me want to understand more about him. But for the rest of it, like, this book made me not give a shit about the last 80 years in the Marvel Universe. So, who's up next? Because I'm talking about this
one. That's me, isn't it?
I guess.
Right. Okay.
One more thing before I go in there. I was reading this thinking, oh my God, Johnny's going to have a field day on this book, because there's just no continuity from page to page. Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. You stole my thunder.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely have no idea what this book's about. There are some really nice touches in there. I liked the two Spider-Man. There's two Spider-Man ones I really like. When the reason why MJ stayed with Peter after Gwen died, and when Peter and May go and see Ben's grave, I thought those were absolutely perfect examples of what encapsulates those characters. That said, that is probably the only two stories that encapsulates anything about any of the characters that are in this book. It's messy. It's awful to look at. There's too many 9-panel pages because you've only got so much space to tell a story. I honestly, this is self-congratulating grandeur that is just like, look at us, we're so great. We've been around for 8 years. Well, you haven't, have you? Marvel as a brand hasn't been around for 8 years. Not at all. You know, and to be fair, nobody cares that much about what happened before Fantastic Four number one. So you can brag and shout all you like about, you know, all the other stuff between 61 and before that time, but no one gives a rat's ass. No one. So if you're going to celebrate yourselves, celebrate with the characters that have made you who you are, not the characters that you kind of moved away from, because otherwise you would have collapsed. And let's not forget, in between the 90s, I would have liked to see some satirical poke at the fact that Marvel almost imploded under the weight of X-books and the whole glut of comic quantity over quality. That's not even mentioned. It's all, oh yeah, everything's fine, everything's rosy. Well, you know, if you want to celebrate, talk about the things you also messed up as well. Because coming back from that is a big story. But again, you don't do that. You just say you've always been fantastic. You've always been great. You haven't at all. At all. So this book to me is just a big fat mess of a book. And I don't care how many first appearances are in it. I don't care if we're going to get Millie the Model, Terry the Typist, or any other version of characters whose surname has the same letter as the first name. I do not give a rat's ass. Stick to what you're good at. Stick to the characters that made you who you are. Please. This is a clobber. Thank you.
Lucas?
So you're wrong. Both of you guys are wrong. This is the hottest book. The hottest book of the last 2 weeks. It was hot even before it came out. So it's really? Yes, even before it even came out. So I'll go into that a little later. So what's great about this is that, because there was also, there's another book that's kind of giving some context to some of this stuff, and it's called The History of the Marvel Universe. It's going through all the freaking timelines and bringing up all these different characters. It didn't get put stories like them, like this did, but it just said, hey, here's this character, and here's where this character came from. But this is actually putting stories to it, and it's kind of freaking slowly rolling. What was and I agree with you, there are some oddities in here, right? Like they're trying to put in the diversity. Like the second story or the third story is like America Chavez, and the fact that, hey, America Chavez has two moms. Okay, weird. That was a weird thing, but got it. Disney and Marvel, they're trying to move in a new direction. Then you got the Black Panther stories, and hey, this is the first African American superhero. Once again, I really don't care, but I get the direction of what they were trying to do with this whole book. They're trying to say, here are these characters, right, that we have in the Marvel Universe. And going forward, these are characters that you might see popping up in either our movies, our animation, or our comics. Got it. But they needed to flesh out a little bit, some of these other characters a little bit more, right? For instance, some of us speculators, we might know who America Chavez are, but if you're not reading comics like every freaking week, or if you haven't been reading for the last 3 years, you're not going to know or care who America Chavez is, right? There's also the Thunderer, the Night Thrasher, Red Wolf, the White Tiger. There's all these other characters that they're trying to bring up, and I get it. They're trying to make everybody understand that. Also, Adam 2, that was, I guess, another Captain America at some point.
Blue Marvel, too. Yeah.
Yeah. The Dark Avenger. That's definitely a project that Marvel's working their way to as soon as they get this whole Spider-Man thing squared away. They got the little kid Loki running through. Crazy 2, the Crazy comic. That was a good comic from like 20 years ago. They're trying to bring that back, and I think the first number one issue of it coming back is coming out next month, I believe. Gorilla Man, New Agents of Atlas. Yep, got it. You guys make some good points, but it all depends on which way Marvel's trying to go. So, and then the whole thing about the Enclave and the Adam Warlock connection, I totally missed that. I didn't really know about that. When you were talking about the diversity stuff and them talking about how they're trying to make it seem like it was freaking cool the whole time,
yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting, right? Because there is a couple panels on there where they have Steve Rogers and Bucky as kids, right? But they're missing a key character that was in there, and it was from Young Allies number 1 through 4 or 5. There was a character named Whitewash Washington, right?
wait, what?
Yes, Whitewash Washington. He was a light-skinned black kid who hung out with those guys back in the day. When Steve Rogers grew up and, you know, he was fighting, this kid stuck with Bucky back on the streets fighting Nazis and stuff. So I thought it was kind of weird that they freaking kept him out. They could have stuck him in there, you know, just put his real name in there. Didn't have to call him Whitewash, but, you know, they probably should have kept that in there. But so the reason why this was hot is that D23, they passed out at one of the panels. I forget which panel it was. They punched out a whole bunch of copies of this thing for free, right? So that's just the cover that everybody's hunting down. It's got Captain Marvel, Captain America, Iron Man, Black Panther, Spider-Man, and it's got Mickey on the freaking cover. And right now, this is a $200 freaking book, right?
Really?
Yeah. And then if you look in the background, you know, you've got Fantastic Four, you got Fing Fan Foom, you've got X logos, you've got Ant-Man, Daredevil, you've got a whole bunch of stuff that is kind of hints to the direction that they're going forth with. Is all in the background of this particular thing. Now, here's the deal. There's also a black and white joint that's out there of the same thing, and there was only 30 put out there.
And, really?
Yep, and I'm trying to chase this down, and the last price that I was quoted was $500.
Wow.
So, and it's possible that it might go up to $1,000, but one of my boys wants to split it down the middle, but we'll see on that. But if you ever get a chance that you can buy this for under $200 or even under $100, we can grab that freaking book, because for years to come, this is going to be a book that you're going to want to have.
It'll cost $10 anyway. Yeah. That could be. Turning people
away. Yeah, and don't get me wrong. There's other covers that came out through the local comic book shops. Like there's the Tedesco variant, which has a She-Hulk on there. It's a little like a sexy little She-Hulk. It's a little weird because you got Hulk freaking gawking at her, and that's weird because I thought they were cousins. You know, there's that whole little thing going on. But otherwise, there are some really good covers. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that I thought was inside it. You just gotta freaking take your time, read through it, and then this is gonna be a good one. As the projects are coming out and they're announcing the projects, you know, you can flip through this book and see where the connections are to all the stuff that's inside.
I also saw, you know, there's a Star Wars page in here too. So I was like,
yep.
Mm-hmm. That is totally, I mean, Red this four. Is supposed to be Marvel, right?
Yep, Red 4, yep.
So if they're going to throw Star Wars in there, then why didn't you throw in New Universe? Why didn't you throw in Malibu or even the Ultimate Universe? The Ultimate Universe was huge back in 2000. So
it's right. You're talking about back in 2000, but going forward, I don't know what they're planning on doing forward. Like, the point of the stuff that they went back to the 80s or to, like, was it 1940? I think that was the earliest that they went back to.
In 1938, so.
Actually, that's a lie. I don't know what the year Black Knight was rolling around, but they are connecting that to future projects that they're doing, that they're going to do. So, let's see. For instance, wow. Oh, yeah, you got Conan in 1970s for some reason. I don't know why they put that freaking timeline in there, but.
Because that's where he first appeared in Marvel, but under the Savage Sword of Conan by Roy Thomas. But if this isn't a celebration, then this isn't a celebration of everything that's gone on in Marvel
right.
in the past.
Right.
This
right. is an advertisement.
Yeah, it's an ad for everything that's coming up. And you know what? Shame on you, Marvel. Shame. Don't try and flog me an advert of characters that I don't care about. You know, like
Blind Justice.
Night, I mean, people say, oh, Night Thrasher. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember he was in New Warriors. All right, and? You know? Yeah. But, hey-ho. So, right. I guess the variant covers are always going to be more expensive, but that doesn't... Whilst I get it's a buyer's market out there, just because somebody wants to sell it for shed loads of money doesn't mean you have to buy it for shed loads of money. And it also doesn't say how good the comic book is. Itself, but hey, it's your money, go for it.
So yeah, so we got a Clobber, an Invisible Woman, and a Flame on. So that okay, so this book is pretty polarizing this week. So you know, take it how you will. We all love Marvel Comics on some level. So there's something in there for everybody. So even if you could get like 3 or 4 pages worth of enjoyment out of that book, I mean, I don't know if it's worth the $10, but
ooh, you know, purchase at $10. Let's say I'm going with not quite worth it, but you know.
All right. So let's jump into something maybe a little more palatable for everyone. Let's jump into the current round of House and Powers of X, and so. I believe it's Powers of X number 4 that was
That's
the first
right.
one.
Powers first this time around. It had a switcheroo. And for those that kind of wonder why, check out the last panel. For me, this book, Powers, for me, House has been the best one. Out of the two books,
yes,
House has been the most engaging. It's been the most fun throughout. It has worked better, I think. Mutants and Dark Futures kind of bore me after a while, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of like a whole old hat sort of thing. But this issue of Powers, whoa, that last panel, what a killer.
Yeah.
That was a killer panel, to say the least.
Literally.
So it's written by Jonathan Hickman, art by R.B. Silver, color artist is Marty Gracia, letters by VCs Clayton Coles. Our cows. Colorists and letterers are the same on the House book as well to keep it that uniform look. I've got to say, as I said, I think this book, this has been the best issue of Powers so far. Just purely because of the build and the surprise at the end. And because it happens, it's out now, so we're not going to spoil anything.
Right.
But when it happens, and you realize why, you get this whole Powers of 10, House of 10 thing. And in the past, we were thinking that House of 10 is the current universe. When really, in all essence, that's the reshaped universe already, isn't it? Because all the bad stuff's happened, and now they've sort of restarted it again. And my mind just went like,
yeah,
what the crap? This book, huge flame on.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you, just because, you know, everybody, we're all in this ride together for the X-Men for the last couple of months now, and to see the story that Hickman is kind of laying out, and you're getting the beats along the way, and the timeline that they published in a month ago, and I believe it was Powers number 2, where you had the 10 lives of Moira, and what you realize at the end of this book is that this was the her last life, not the last one, the 10th life, right? Mm. So this is where she's killed as Lady Apocalypse, and then she's going to be reincarnated for the 11th time, which presumably is the last one, right? And now that's the story we're getting in House of X now, right?
You've got the numbers wrong. So she gets killed the
ninth. Okay, so this is the ninth one.
Yeah. This is the ninth one where she gets killed by Wolverine, and that leads into the 10th life, which is why Lucas calls this book The House of Ten. And
right, okay, so I apologize.
That's it, isn't it? It's basically it's a story of the 10 lives of Moira.
Right.
Does anybody else see the parallel between this and Days of Future Past?
Do you
remember when I said when we first started doing these books, I said House felt like Giant X-Men number one, and that Powers felt like Days of Future Past. This, by sending somebody back with knowledge of the future to change something, Hickman is mining old X-Men stories, but he's doing it so well, nobody's calling him out on it.
Right. Yeah, you know, for sure.
We talked about the Venom books, and we said, like, oh, it's just another symbiote that's always this. Hickman's doing exactly the same thing, but he's doing it so much better, you don't even notice it.
Yep, and it's so getting me excited for what's to come, right? Because you realize that these stories and Moira's story in particular, and that is really kind of basically boiling down to this is all about Moira, right? Mm. And what's going to happen next, and how is she going to figure out with all this information she's got over the 9 lives, what she does with it eventually. You know, what's going to work, and is anything going to work eventually, right?
Mm.
So, and can we talk about how powered up Nimrod is now? It's a huge power up for him, right? And that's for the next book, right? Because he's not in this one, or he is, but he's in it more in the next one, right?
Hopefully. Crazy son of a bitch. Lucas, what do you think?
So, I agree with everything you guys are saying. I mean, it was amazing. What's interesting is, so I love it when a writer or creator can come along on a new book and make old books relevant again, right? So, the book that made this relevant is, of course, the first appearance of Moira Taggart, which was Uncanny X-Men number 96. So, the day after this came out, nobody was moving it. It wasn't touching. You can find copies for $56. Now, everybody's pulling their stuff off of eBay, and you'll be hard to find something under $500 out there on the secondary market. But I know for a fact that if you go through some of these long boxes out there, you're going to find some copies in those freaking dollar bins, right? So, if you're doing long box jumping or diving with the next couple of weeks, go ahead and keep freaking finding that. But everybody's kind of waiting and seeing like how this plays out, because we don't know how this ends. Because if this ends with Moira MacTaggert still having powers or still alive, that Uncanny X-Men number 96 is going to be a great book to have. If they keep her dead because she has 10 lives, but she's on the number 9, that just means she might die wherever she pops up next, who knows, right? So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I like this one. We'll let you jump into House of X, maybe talk about that one too. So Johnny, what did you think about the House of X?
Oh, House of X. Well, it's good to see them actually get up and do something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what I was thinking too.
We had like a couple of issues where they sit around doing the talky-talky stuff and the world-building stuff. And eventually we get to see them go and do some crazy stuff. So, again, I said how fun it was seeing the Sentinel head up in space. Now we get to go and visit it. Written again by Hickman. Pepe Larraz is the artist on this. I think if I'm being uber critical, I don't think the art in this book is as good as in previous books. I think it feels a little bit rushed in places. Excuse me. But that's a very small criticism. Is it just me or is Xavier like almost bonkers right now?
Yeah, I thought of that ever since the first issue when he said to me, my X-Men, and they were all coming out of the pods.
Yeah, it's a little bit, I don't want to say the word, it's a little bit incestuous there. I'll go with that one instead of the one I was thinking of. Yeah, but great to see the resolution of the Sabretooth thing. Always great to see the White Queen. It was, again, just a fun read. It's kind of the switcheroo had to happen in the schedule so that Powers had that absolute, oh my God. Yeah, and now they've gone back in time. Now the memories have gone back in time with the Moira. We get to see what they're trying to stop, or we assume that what they're trying to stop, the whole Sentinel building out in space. That's what we assume's happening.
Right.
It could be completely different by the time we've finished it, but you know, good to see Nightcrawler doing his stuff. We all know a certain someone who'll be happy about that. But yeah, and it's another solid issue. The thing I like about House and Powers is that you cannot just rush through the book.
Yep.
You know, I understand that we're different views on the Venom book and we're different views on the Marvel 1000, but you can just flick through that and you don't miss anything.
Yep.
This, you've got to sit down and you've got to read it, which is why Clayton Cowell should do better on the letters. God damn it.
So there was one thing on House of X, and I'll just bring up real quick that I don't know if we're supposed to be asking questions about this, but Nightcrawler's exchange there with this, is she a Sentinel, Karima, there? When she says, when he asks her if she's picking sides.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that the same character from the previous issue that's with Nimrod?
Yeah.
All right. And she's red. She's red in that book, which is a thousand years in the future. But
so let me just go back, because I've got the book here. I took it. I don't know if Lucas agrees, but the one when he's talking to the person, that isn't that the android person that's in the future?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. It's the android person that's hanging out with Nimrod that then goes in.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the Red Nightcrawler, it's the android that's kicking around who then goes to fight the X-Men and then gets there and realizes, oh, it's just a big old distraction because the real game is back at base where they're trying to steal the disc.
Right, so now here she is again, but in the past. Right?
Yeah, so she is somewhere along the line in the original timeline. She's going to have to survive this. Oh, in the original timeline, she will have had to survive to get to the future. And right.
Remember they got those memory discs running around, right? So yeah, they can download memory from somebody and then enter something else.
Well, but what was interesting to me was that it seems like that there's some history there, right? And when he says, are you picking sides? To me, that means that at some point she was allied with the X-Men. Right?
Agreed.
Right.
So... yeah, so to me, I mean, there's got to be an issue coming up where they kind of flesh that out. So that That to me was a little bit of foreshadowing, and it did confuse me a little bit that this was the same character because of the difference in the skin tone. And
right. Well, you know what's interesting is that what struck me first before we called it Karima is that I'm looking at her face dead straight on, and it kind of looks like Elsa Bloodstone to me, man, the way the facial features are. I don't know if that was on purpose or that was by accident, but that's just the way she looks to me.
Let's not distract the readers any more than they are.
Okay. All right.
So the other big thing so about this is, you know, of course you have to read the text too, mm-hmm. but they do reveal the entire X-Men alphabet there, which so I imagine if you want to get all your issues and go back and try to decipher all the different little codes that are in Mutant, I think that would probably be hours of fun for everyone.
Nah, I'm straight.
So
maybe if I get drunk enough, maybe I'll give it a shot. But nah.
The thing that juxtaposes for this powers the Powers of X issue last week and then House of X this week is that you get the, you know, pretty much in Powers of X all the X-Men pretty much wiped out by the end of the book. And then here at the end, apparently the same.
Right?
So that to me is, you know, I want to stop short at calling Jonathan Hickman a genius when it comes to this, but it's obvious that he's really been spending a lot of time writing this book. Yeah. And really it's his tour de force right now, right? This could very well be his magnum opus for his career. And out of a lot of good stuff that he's done. So this is really, really good.
Yep. And then he's going to turn around and give it to some other writers to jack it up in a couple months.
Well, let's not look too far ahead. Let's enjoy this. And hope he doesn't go off the rails. That's why this is what scares me about Marvel is that they start great in issue four, issue five. You're like, this is the best thing ever. And then it craps out at the end because nobody ever knows how to end anything. But anyhow, a huge flame ons for these X books. If you're not buying these books, what the hell is wrong with you? So, all right. We have some news coming out of D23, right, Lucas?
Yeah, I mean, I think I covered a lot of the stuff. We're talking about the She-Hulk, the Black Knight stuff. There was a couple of surprises. That She-Hulk was a big surprise for everybody. There's also the Moon Girl stuff. Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur. She's getting some animation action going. The Kamala Khan is going. There's rumors about the Riri Williams Iron Man. She might get some animation action going. Alpha Force, that's another rumor that's coming out.
You mean A-Force?
A-Force, yes, excuse me. What did I say? Alpha Force?
You said Alpha Force.
Okay, yeah. What is interesting is that there is Alpha Flight inside the Marvel Comics 1000, so I don't know if they actually plan on doing something with that. Another thing that's interesting is that, and I'm just looking back into the Marvel Comics 1000 of all the little minutia characters that are in there. So Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, they have a little kid in there. I forget her name, but she's running around, so that would be interesting.
Danielle.
Yeah, it would be interesting if they brought her to the screen. Let's see. Yeah, Night Thrasher, Thunderer. They actually brought out the very last panel is Eternity, I believe, right?
You're looking at Marvel Comics number 1000 again?
Yes. Because it's striking like how much news came out of D23, and that stuff is crammed inside of Marvel 1000 in one way or another. I haven't heard any more news about Adam Warlock being brought around. The whole Enclave thing, I haven't heard anything, but it is interesting if they were to bring that about. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, that's supposed to be happening, what, a couple years from now after James gets his stuff together?
2022.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? Was there any other?
There's a Moon Knight TV show in development for Disney Plus.
Right. So everybody's in a holding pattern right now because they want to hear who's going to be the actual actor, right? Because if Keanu Reeves gets the shot, then this book, which is already at $2,000 to $6,000, is going to go crazy. If it's somebody that they don't know and that they don't like, it's going to drop and plummet. And I'm talking about Werewolf by Night number 32. So it could either go off crazy, or it could drop to the highest that Carol Danvers dropped her books, and now you can get that book for $60, you know, off of eBay. So that's another thing that people are waiting on. I'm trying to think, is there any other news?
Did anyone mention on D23 that all this fantastic Disney TV stuff that they're doing is only going to be available to the US, so therefore me talking about it or listening to it is absolutely no bother whatsoever.
What? Again?
Because being in the UK, apparently my money's not good enough for Disney, so screw you, Mickey Mouse.
Wow. They did it again? Because you're having issues with the DC Comics joint, right? You can't get on there?
Yeah. Well, that's not going to be lasting very long, is it, really, to be fair? There's only Young Justice, which comes to an end, that's keeping that afloat. They can't even keep their own new series up. You know, something's lasted one season.
If they opened up the UK market, Johnny, DC streaming service would not be having the problems it is.
Well, if they opened... Well, to be fair, it just... I know I've said this before, it's frustrating, because it's like it won't just affect the UK... It'll affect Europe, it'll affect other countries, you know, where comic books are sold. And when you talk about Avengers Endgame, it made stupid amounts of money worldwide. It didn't make stupid amounts of money just in the US. So there is an audience outside of the 52 states. Is there 52 still, or is it 51?
It's 50. It's only 50. There's only 50.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got my DC mixed up. All right, so outside the 50 states, there is a world. It's not like, what's that film with Jim Carrey? Is it Pleasantville? No? What's the one?
So the Truman Show?
Yes. It's not like the Truman Show. The world doesn't just disappear outside the US of A, you know. There is other people that live further afield. So it's like... I paid my money, I buy my comic books, I go to the movies, I watch this stuff, you know. But, you know, I have a Netflix subscription, so I've sat through, you know, Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Jessica Jones. Not all of Daredevil, because it got boring. Or even The Punisher Season 2. But on top of that, it's like, okay, you're not good enough. And it frustrates me. So
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And we'll get you your stuff, Johnny. You'll be able to watch all that stuff.
Great.
I'm going to put in a request.
I'm changing my tune. Disney are doing me such a great service because I don't have to watch all this crap. Yes! Yay! Thank you, Mickey Mouse. I love you.
Nice. So when we review them, you're just going to be sitting there in silence.
We won't be reviewing on this. That'll be a different. Is that?
That'd be a different.
Yeah.
Flip side focus or something.
No, that's indie books. We do have one for TV. Can't remember what it's called.
I don't think is it called anything these days. We changed the name.
Okay. There you go. The reason we had to change the name is because half the people, you know, with one living in Australia, one living in the UK, one living in Ireland, couldn't see the damn shows, so kind of got a little bit.
Jesus. It'll be 2 years late by the time you guys get around seeing it.
Hashtag no spoilers, you might have seen this, but...
The other thing that they revealed at D23 in the Star Wars realm is the final trailer for The Mandalorian, and also announcing that Ewan McGregor is coming back to do Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Which I would be great, cool.
He's even English, isn't he?
But maybe I'll just excuse myself from this conversation.
Jeez.
All right. Is there any other horrifying news coming out of the Disney Plus app? Is that it?
I'm looking real quick. I don't.
No, there isn't. All right, that's it. Thank you very much for your time. Bye.
All right. So I think we're running a little long right now. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of No Prize Podcast. And be here 2 weeks from now. We'll be talking more X-Men, right? And whatever else.
I will be here 2 weeks from now.
Oh, what's going on?
I am in Mexico, baby.
Oh, so it'll be the Professor and Lucas show.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Yep. Woohoo!
So, all right. Flame on everything. Let's go.
Yeah, talk about D23 next time.
There you go. Johnny will be flaming on in Mexico.
Flaming something.
All right. Well, enjoy your fortnight, and we shall see you again. And I'll see you in a month, Johnny.
Adios, amigos.
Boom.